Well, I'm Brian Prince. Welcome to ArtCast. We are yet again at the MVP Summit in Redmond. We're in Building 118. And today we're talking to Caleb Jenkins.
Hello.
And so Caleb, you are an MVP in what?
My MVP is technically in ASP.NET.
Okay.
Probably very quickly making this jump to the new MVP Silverlight.
Yeah, very exciting news. They announced that.
Yep.
And so what are you working on lately?
Lately, I've been doing, we do a lot of consulting in the Dallas area. So I left Microsoft 2 years ago to join a company called Improving Enterprises.
Okay.
And we do 90% of what we do is in the Dallas area with, you know, any number of large customers for Central Region. You know, customers that are, you know, global airline companies to, you know, mortgage companies across the U.S.
Okay.
But anybody with pretty much work in the Dallas area, we do a lot of mentoring and training.
Okay.
For those guys.
Cool. And so today we're going to talk about, in my career I've called it unit level architecture, yep. But you had a different phrase for it that I think I like better.
What was my phrase for that? So and it's always interesting when you talk to architects and having worked in the role of an architect for a number of large companies, and it's usually you look at the, you know, big system level, you know, and you're looking at this system and it's going to talk to this system and the big moving parts. Mm-hmm. And the reality, I think, where the really, you know, where the money, you know, hits the road, where it hits the pavement and the rubber hits the road to actually make the application work. I call it, you know, code level architecture.
Yeah.
And it's at the level of, you know, how do we make this code, you know, maintainable and composable and testable. Mm-hmm. And all the things that are important at a code level are important to a system.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, from an architectural perspective, I like to talk about good ways to organize your project, good ways to, you know, approach things. And the reality is that there's a lot better tooling today than there were even 5 years ago in the .NET space. Mm-hmm. To do things like dependency injection, do things like, you know, separate your concerns without having to, you know, do a lot of manual coding. You can push off a lot of the manual dependency injection into a framework like Microsoft's Unity.
Yeah.
Or Castle, Windsor, or Ninject.
Yeah, yeah. Nate's here actually from Ninject.
Yeah, well, so he's not an MVP yet. He needs to be. He needs to be an MVP. Mm-hmm. But he was here for all.NET,
yeah.
And so we hung out a little bit the first night.
Yeah.
Very excited about the new stuff he did in Ninject too.
Yeah.
Really, he's added features and cut the size almost in half.
Yeah, and he's actually using IOC in his own platform.
Yes. Yes, kind of a lot of reuse happening.
Yeah.
Within Ninject 2, which is very cool to see.
Yeah. So I think this code level architecture, right, isn't just for architects. I think everyone plays the role of an architect to some degree on a project.
Absolutely.
You know, and how I structure my code, how transparent is my code, right? That's really important to maintainability. Mm-hmm. So briefly run us down why we would want to use DI, dependency injection.
Right.
Regardless of the flavor that you want, what does that buy me?
So it buys you a lot of things. You know, it's always, I tell the story, I do a lot of talks for Ineta, and one of my favorite talks is dependency injection, and all of our demos happen to be in Silverlight. And, you know, how many times do you write an application and it works great, and then the business comes back and says, great, now we need it to do this.
I've never had that happen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, new scenarios, new business needs come up that weren't in the original scope, that weren't in the original spec. And so writing your application that, you know, to be flexible, to be able to you know, introduce new scenarios. Mm-hmm. And so the more, you know, it's an overused analogy in the dependency injection space, but I think it works really well. And it's the story of, okay, if I'm going to create an application that's a knight, you know, and the knight wants to go slay a dragon, you know, how does that work? Well, you know, if I was just going to write the code, it might be my class is a knight, and he has a method called, you know, slay dragon with sword. And you think, well, that's great. That works. It's easy. It's concise. But then all of a sudden, I need to go rescue the princess. Or all of a sudden, I need to go, you know, use a flamethrower, which a knight doesn't even know about.
Yeah.
How do I use a flamethrower? And, you know, there's new scenarios that get introduced into the equation. Well, how do you actually, you know, then how do you build your application? And not only that, from a test, you know, testability aspect, with the first scenario, how do I know if the sword is sharp or not? How do I test that sword? You know, step one, go get a dragon.
Yeah. Right. Step three, profit.
Right, try to kill the dragon, you know. Oh, step four, it wasn't sharp, everybody run. And so, you know, by isolating my concerns and saying, well, what if I had iHero, and what if I had iWeapon and iQuest?
Yeah.
And I can start to really isolate, you know, because now I could take a sword and I can mock out a hero.
Yeah.
I can mock out, you know, a quest, and I could find out, does this thing function as expected?
Yeah.
And then it makes it easier, so when something breaks, I'm not at the system level saying, well, I have this input, I'm expecting this output. It didn't work. Okay, well, you know, if I'm at the UI layer just putting input in, it has to go through the entire system before I get a return.
Yeah, the black box.
Yeah. And so at that scenario, you think, well, okay, it broke. Well, what broke? I have no idea. Mm-hmm. Something broke. And so by really being able to isolate my elements within my application, I can isolate them and test them independently of the other moving parts.
Yeah.
I worked on, it's funny, my son, he's learning Latin in school. He's in like third grade.
Cool.
And so I built a flashcard game on Silverlight. I should have called it Silverlight game.
Silver card.
For the Latin games. And when I first built it, it wasn't keeping score. And then later I thought, you know what, I'd like to keep score. I'd like him to know. But I had some algorithms, some, you know, how much is this question worth? Well, if you already got one wrong, it's going to be worth less. Yeah, is this the first? And there were some rules.
So your son has an advanced math degree is what you're saying.
Well, he's learning Latin. But it was great because in this application, just doing something like, I want to keep score, isolating that to its own separate thing, saying, okay, creating an object called I keep score, mm-hmm. and being able to introduce that into the system and wire that up in isolation and separation, it's really it allows for good architecture at a code level.
So it really allows you to componentize your system. You can even distributed teams, I can build that piece almost standalone, test it thoroughly, right, and then wire that in, inject that in,
right,
to the system, and get it up and running, right?
Yeah. So it allows you to do that. It also, you know, it makes my code more mobile.
Yeah.
You know, so all of a sudden I want to, you know, run this in a different system, and you know, over here when we're using logging, it's, you know, we're maybe using some high throughput multi-scale logging, you know, apparatus. But I want to take my code and I actually want to make it, you know, I want to take the business logic and run it on a mobile application. Well, I'm probably going to use a different logger.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to have some, you know, there are going to be elements that are reusable across platforms, and then there are going to be elements that quite frankly, I need to re-platform.
Yeah.
You know, in Silverlight or, you know, in a different scenario.
Yeah.
And so if I'm interface-based, if I'm injecting instead of, you know, relying on some base class that I'm inheriting from.
Yeah.
So, you know, the concept is, you know, prefer composition over inheritance.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And that works out really well.
Do you think there's a tax with using dependency injection that, is there a class of apps that maybe I bypass that, maybe departmental apps you think or something like that? Because architects are a critical thought. We can't use every tool in every project. You end up, you know, with a NASA, like, nothing against NASA, but you end up with over-engineered things.
Yep. So, and I've worked on my share of systems that you inherit them, you think, this is way more complicated than it needs to be.
Yeah.
For what it's trying to accomplish. I think if there's a clear architecture in the design, then good principles apply to all solutions.
Yeah. Okay.
That being said, you know, one of my problems, this is something I come back to, is, you know, I'm more of a framework guy. I'm more of a, you know, let's make this a component that's reusable.
Yeah.
And yet I work on a lot of projects, especially in Silverlight, that are really a proof of concept, that are really, hey, we want to show something. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I struggle with personally, is, okay, you know, I'm creating control. And sometimes you just need to say, the border's going to be black. Mm-hmm. You don't, you know, and not think, well, how do I make this a property, and how do I give it a default value, and where's the dependency property, and let's wire that up. Sometimes you just need to hard code it and say, the border's black, move on.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are lots of scenarios where, you know, really in the proof of concept world, you just need to drive an idea, mm-hmm. And make it visible so that someone else can see it.
Yeah.
And I think there's scenarios there where, you know, you're just on the UI layer, you're just going to be building something, and you don't have to structure your application, you know, with this. But then again, you know, I'm creating a mashup between Twitter and Flickr. Silverlight using dependency injection, and I was working on it on the plane because I was working on the visualization.
Oh yeah.
Well, I'm completely disconnected.
Yeah.
And yet, but I have a, you know, offline provider for Twitter and an offline provider for Flickr.
Kind of a mock object.
Just a mock object that I created, and so go into the configuration, say, hey, instead of using the real Twitter provider that I wrote and the real, you know, Flickr, I'm just gonna, you know, hand you 5 tweets that are hard coded and a handful of images that are hard coded.
Yeah.
but it gives a lot of flexibility. It also makes it nice when you're demoing something and the real stuff breaks.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how many times I have to do a demo of something and there's no internet connection.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So the main back to the maintainability, by modularizing or using these components, I can, in my testing, so I guess to interrupt myself, when you're in a serious testing environment, really committed to unit testing and things like that, and TDD, this is almost required, right? To be able to make it easy to test any component in isolation. Would you say?
So,
I mean, because most,
so yeah.
I think testers have really resurrected dependency injection, because a decade ago, I think when it was kind of the IOC, it was more about complex creation patterns for objects and things like that.
So strategy pattern, when that was first introduced by like the Dingo 4, it was really about grouping common algorithms, right? If I'm using DES or triple DES for my encryption, my application shouldn't care.
Yeah.
Right? I should have a common interface. I'm working with it the same way. I shouldn't really care about the internals. But that reality of taking that concept of, if I'm working against an interface, I can change out the implementation, you know, and that flexibility really builds into all of your application.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots of places where that becomes applicable, not just in, you know, these you know, one-off algorithms or you know, complex scenarios.
So you do coaching, your company does training and coaching.
We do.
And so if you start with a team that's comfortable with .NET, let's say .NET 2,
yep.
VB, how long does it take the average developer to really kind of grok DI and adopt Unity or Ninject or one of those frameworks?
So when you first look at dependency injection, it's a little mind-numbing at first. Mm-hmm. It's a little, there's a lot of moving parts. And a new vocabulary, and that becomes the hard part. It's just learning some of the new vocabulary.
Okay.
And so we usually start off with, you know, one, maybe a half day brown bag kind of session. Let's just walk through some of the big moving parts. Once you jump in though, and you start really using the scenario, I mean, it's a great thing to demo when you're showing a service or a class running, and you go and add a new, you know, let's say a requirement in the constructor. Now, everybody in the world knows as soon as you change the constructor parameter, what's the next thing you do? You compile, and you go look at everything that just broke.
Yeah, you get 20 things you broke, and that's your tasks for the day.
You get that error that says, except this number of parameters. Mm-hmm. And so you go through and find all those locations where you are instantiating this object, and think, oh, well, maybe I don't really need that error, so I'm going to pass in null, right? Because that's a quick shortcut. Well, then in your code, you've got to go check for null.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a real pain. And the first time you really set up a good dependency injection environment where you say, oh, you know what, I need this service. So you add it as a constructor parameter, you put it in your application, you start using it, and nothing breaks. In fact, it works. It works as expected. Mm. And it becomes a very nice workflow for a developer to say, well, I need this. I forgot I needed this. And just add it, and I didn't go anywhere else. It's already wired up in the system. I just add it in my class, and it becomes a really nice workflow.
Yeah.
Developers, once they get in that workflow, it's hard to go back.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get out of that because it becomes addictive.
Yeah. Great. So what's your blog address?
Developingux.com.
Awesome. And Twitter?
Caleb Jenkins.
Great.
So twitter.com/CalebJenkins. And in fact, the slide deck I presented at the Redmond.net user group last night on dependency injection in Silverlight. The slide deck for that, if you go to developingux.com/IOC.
Cool. Awesome. Thanks for coming.
Thanks, Brian. Yeah.